not supposed to be Saturday?
What day is it today?
Wednesday.
Exactly.
Welcome to Film Fight Club. I'm Glenn Falcon, Slammer Falcon's Green, and we are joined by freelance writer and critic Virat Nehru.
Ciao.
Sydney filmmaker Chris Evans.
Bonjour.
And a very special guest because Static Vision's Hyperlinks is happening this weekend at Pink Flamingo. Felix Hubbell.
Aloha, baby.
It is a big...
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. We're so excited for this episode because it is a new festival. It is happening. We're going to talk about it in a sec. But first, we want to talk about Static Vision and the team that have brought Hyperlinks to life.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's mostly me and Connor Bateman, who started 4-3 with a couple of people. We kind of felt that there was a bit of a void in screenings on sort of a monthly basis in Sydney of art house material, the sort of stuff you get in rep theatres in LA and New York, and looked into the logistics of bringing some of that stuff out here. Turns out it works. And so, yeah, we've been operating for about a year now and had a bit of a pretty successful screening with Long Day's Journey Into Night earlier in this year.
Sold out Norton Street.
Yeah, absolutely. Sold out Norton Street, sold out three screens at Central and some more at Norton Street. So after that, we went, we're sitting on a little bit of cash, and our mantra has always been, we don't pay ourselves, we don't make any money. Anything that kind of comes in gets reinvested in future screenings so we can run at a loss on some of them and stuff like that. And we went, well, this is more than we expected to have. Why don't we try and book 13 films and put them on a weekend and see what we can do with that.
Well, fortunate to have you guys, because I feel like this undertaking you're doing now wouldn't be possible if people were in it for profit.
No, I really appreciate that, but I totally agree. And I think that that's maybe part of the reason that, you know, Australia's got a smaller population that doesn't have the density of people around the city centre to kind of keep this sort of stuff going like that.
But so also Sydney, right? Like, I'm getting ahead of ourselves because we haven't really spoken about what the festival is, but it seems like such a Melbourne thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Sydney's got some diamonds in the rough, baby. Like, Sydney can, it just needs a bit of something going on. People are going
to... Yeah, you built it and people came. I mean, going to Static Vision events, they're fun, they're different, they're eclectic. And now we can have, instead of going to see some, there's a bunch of terrible movies out now and
we'll
cinemas.
Be talking about one of them briefly, which only Felix among us had the courage to face up to.
It's very fast, very blue, and apparently they've rejigged it.
It's Fantasy Island, baby.
But it's all weekend, and so it's Friday through Sunday.
And it's called Hyperlinks.
Yes.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, just before that, I think like the perfect example of why this sort of stuff does work a bit in Sydney is we've known each other all separately through different channels for many years now.
Yeah.
There really is that community. It's just, you know, there's not the regularity of stuff going on to keep us around, apart from, you know, you've got SUF and you've got Sydney Film Festival. That's two events per year, and I think Half Symbolic and a couple of other groups as well are starting to do stuff as well, and I think it's gonna change. I think we're gonna get a bit of nice cultural stuff. Anyway, I'm absolutely
no, you're right.
Actually, you're absolutely right, because I think I've known you and Connor since like 4-3 started, which is ages ago, feels like a lifetime ago now, and now it's like seeing you guys blossom into these wonderful eclectic bitches doing their own thing.
That's the subtext for the festival.
Static Vision. Yeah. A festival by wonderful eclectic bitches.
Yeah. We want to see it in neon lights at Pink Flamingo.
Anyway, I'm doing a terrible job of letting you guys.
No, what are you doing?
This is exactly the kind of audience that we are trying to like bring.
Playing fast and loose.
Yeah.
The audience on the weekend's going to be incredible. It's going to be all the old friends you saw at the cult screen. It's going to be new people who are up and coming filmmakers. I mean, that's what I'm guessing.
Well, Pink Flamingo. Yeah, is that why you picked Pink Flamingo?
Oh, absolutely. Ingrid, who runs the venue, is just such a kind of incredible force in the Sydney film scene, and it's such a good venue, very like ad hoc and DIY. I feel like it really kind of fits the mantra of what we're kind of trying to go for with stuff, especially with the sort of money arrangements on stuff. So it was kind of the perfect venue for us for this. In terms of that community, that's what we really want, is like, young people who haven't come to stuff before can kind of come, take in a whole day, meet everyone. That's why we're doing single screenings. You can make every single session in the program if you want to. You can do full days. You can kind of pick and choose. But it is really that fostering of discussions around the film and after the film and around the concept. Anyway, what is the festival?
What is Hyperlinks? Yeah.
So Hyperlinks is all about the internet. It's a exploration of digital past, presents, and futures. And we kind of selected 13 features about digital cultures, I guess about the current state of the world, the future state of the world, the past state of the world in terms of technology. So we've got a really vast array of stuff. We're kicking off with Demon Lover, the Olivia Assayas movie from 2002 about corporate espionage and hentai, and then kind of moving through.
I love that description.
Thank you. Yeah,
that's art.
It's the eclectic bitch description.
Yeah, completely. and then our Saturday is nicknamed for us internally our loud day. So it's a lot of, I don't know, raucous, audacious, very loud, maybe not sonically, but in terms of personality films. And then Sunday's sort of more of a chill out day. So yeah, a 50-50 mix of features and documentaries. Most of them are Australian premieres. We've got a couple of state premieres. I think it's just Demon Lover and The Task that have played in Sydney before. Demon Lover, of course, played 17 years ago in Sydney, and The Task has only ever played in the gallery setting, and that's one that we felt could really benefit from a screen. Anyway,
So taking it from the start, why did you decide to bring back Demon Lover?
We were just kind of throwing around ideas for opening night films, and I feel like Demon Lover kind of encapsulates the entire idea of what we're trying to go for. It's a very, I don't know, boisterous, very... what's like abstract, strange take on an action film, on a thriller.
Yeah.
But it's also one of the earlier films of kind of this generation of filmmaking, or maybe even the last one, that does really tackle kind of issues around the internet, around the dark web, around the commodification of data and privacy.
Also the commodification of the body through the internet, right? Which
completely
seems to be a theme of a lot of the other films in the program.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I guess like a interesting parallel is Searching Eva, which we can talk about a bit later.
Yeah.
But one which is specifically about the commodification of the body and personalities. But yeah, as kind of like an update on Videodrome, it is a really interesting self-contained sort of project itself. So just a bit of background on Demon Lover for people who don't know it. You've got a couple of corporations fighting over the rights for hentai, but what they're not actually fighting over the hentai itself, they're fighting over the hidden site Hellfire Club, which is an extreme sort of dark web bondage site hidden within the extreme hentai sites. And there's a lot of actual corporate espionage and sabotage going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, a lot of people are going to Google hentai tonight.
It's a super weird film.
If you know what hentai is, this is the festival for you.
Or just if you don't, just come on Friday and find out.
Watch Demon Lover.
Yeah.
The thing that strikes me as weird about Demon Lover is I know that there's the Hellfire Club and the background stuff going on, but even that taken into consideration, it's weird to see this much corporate intrigue over hentai.
Yeah, completely, completely. Yeah, and I don't know, it's a bit of a shame. I'm sure you guys have seen the film before.
I've seen it,
I really don't want to spoil the final sentence of the film or the final passage, but I really feel like that final passage is so prescient and really does, in a way, sort of color that level of commodification that, again, kind of floats itself through the rest of the program. One thing we did want to do with the festival is make something really thematically consistent throughout the whole thing. So, yeah, Demon Lover sort of sets the tone for it, and then you're going to get that same sort of mood or vibe echoed through some really kind of like G-level documentaries as opposed to the very Demon Lover.
I guess Demon Lover has that international kind of vibe
completely,
and also like mixed media that seems to be
there's a lot of sort of mixed media stuff
on screens
going on.
Right,
I guess that kind of like brings pretty nicely into the next two films in the program. So on Saturday we've actually got two sort of YouTube collages playing in the festival. Both of them played in Rotterdam in sort of sidebar stuff there. So the first one's a self-induced hallucination, which we have screened as one of our Static Vision Presents screenings earlier last year. It's a cut-up documentary about Slenderman and the mythos surrounding Slenderman, both on and offline, and sort of collective digital delusion, which I guess is the broader theme that ties more into other stuff. So that's just kind of like a screening we're doing. Tickets are $5 for under 25. So that we kind of wanted to bring something on screen to get sort of younger film fans that maybe haven't met each other before or want to kind of get a bit of a community going there in
That's with Film and Revolt.
That is with Film and Revolt, a great group who are really about fostering young writers. And we're really stoked to be doing an event with them. Mm. We're going to be following that with a panel that will be me and my co-programmer, Connor. And it's going to be about video essays and editing.
His specialty.
His specialty completely, although I'll hijack and talk about other stuff.
It's funny because I can imagine Connor speaking right now, and he speaks in the completely opposite way that you speak. And it's really fun to imagine that on a panel.
Yeah, the very measured versus the Connor, completely casual.
Connor is like the, if I can generalize, he's like the presentable corporate one, and you're like the punk rock one.
Yeah, in a way. I mean, it's not fully corporate, please. Yeah.
No, corporate isn't that.
Yeah.
What it's worth, I was at Connor and I, we live very close to each other, and we were in a bottle-o just after I'd seen Rise of Skywalker with a bunch of friends, and they were saying, oh, you're a critic, you're supposed to hate it. And then Connor walks in at this exact moment, and he hears us talking, and he says, yeah, Rise of Skywalker is terrible. He says, oh, what are you, a critic too? Just, he gives off that vibe.
Absolutely. That should be a really fun panel. And then following up that, we've got Lynch History, which is a really incredible film.
It's not about Film Fight Club favorite David Lynch.
No. It's about Film Fight Club other favorite Marshawn Lynch from
Marshawn Lynch
from the Seahawks, the official Film Fight Club team for the purposes of today. Marshawn Lynch is a footballer who used to, basically a bit of background on the NFL. You're obligated to give media appearances and that sort of stuff on your contract. And he used to rock up to his media appearances, not answer any questions, and just basically run down the timer on that for the obligation. And it was, at the time, portrayed as sort of this ungrateful guy messing with the system, but really it was kind of an act of silent resistance against institutionalized racism. And the film really places it within that context. It's a really, really interesting project that basically draws from a bunch of YouTube clips, a bunch of interviews, pieces them all together to kind of tell the story of racism in the media sport industrial complex in the US, filtered through this one footballer and his kind of silent act of resistance around the time of, his name's just completely...
Who knelt. His name is...
Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah,
from the 49ers. So it was sort of tied in with that. So yeah, that's a really, really fascinating project. It's by David Shields, who's quite an acclaimed author. This is his first feature.
Yeah, I've heard of him as an author.
Yeah.
I thought reading the description of this, not having seen it, it kind of sounds a little similar in ambitions to what OJ Made in America did in terms of like framing like the broader picture of questions completely around race and media.
Completely. And I think it really gets across how the media perspective on events can kind of be skewed because, you know, the media is predominantly white and, you know, everything else. And there's, you know, so much marketing money going into that sort of stuff and really influencing, you know, bad faith acting, I guess, against what is like a very earnest and very legitimate form of, resistance. Yeah, so absolutely recommend that film.
And we're going to play a clip from it, I think, or at least an audio clip.
Yeah, absolutely.
And before we do, there's also a party on the Friday night.
There is a party on the Friday night. One of the my favorite DJs from Sydney, Atro, is going to be doing a set for us. So he's in Slim Set, who are a very online sort of inner west and outer west hip-hop group. And the Static Vision sound system, which I'm not quite sure what that consists of just yet, but we'll be doing a set as well.
Is it like your Reclaim the Streets?
It will be. Sound maybe the Donk Baron will make an appearance. That's that night as well. We've put a lot of effort into kind of creating, setting the sort of tone for the festival. So in the lead up, we'll kind of be having drinks in the foyer, and we've got like a very specific playlist, very specific videos playing and stuff, just kind of get you in the mood for the weekend.
It's such a great place. I've actually just sat during screenings. Last one I went to, the one about the nuclear bomb that was specifically going off in Los Angeles. Mm. And at one point I got up and, oh, wait, there's all these couches on the side that look like they've been there since the 70s. You can just lounge and
completely.
It's going to be pretty great in the environment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really a benefit of kind of having a central festival venue and just one screen as well, is that you'll really get a sense of the environment, and it's going to bleed into the programming, and it's going to bleed into the aesthetic and the vibe of Ingrid themselves. And you know,
it seems like a similar kind of conception to what SUF do. Would you say
absolutely,
so?
I would say so. Yeah. Like SUF is absolutely the cream of the crop, I think. Mm. Not just in Australia, I've been to a few overseas festivals as well, of just kind of creating that post-film vibe and the pre-film vibe, and you really yeah, sort of the sense of community that runs around that, and the way that they fit out Factory Theatre to really make that work.
Yeah, to be clear, we've got the Underground Film Festival.
Which is in September.
Yes. Yep.
But just generally, what I really find fascinating, and I think this would also bring, is that each festival has its own kind of audience. And I really feel, you know, Hyperlinks is going to like attract a different kind of crowd.
A crowd that don't come to film festivals. Yeah.
Job's
a
World.
Marrickville crowd, too.
Job's World sounds like it could play soft, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Job's World is fantastic and, you know, little missed opportunity for soft, but I'm very glad to have it. Zeros and Ones.
I love that. Yeah, Zeros and Ones.
Incredible as well, which favorites. We're pairing them together. We'll talk about them a bit later, I guess. But yeah, they're both straight out of the soft program.
On this note, if we can just for a moment talk away from the actual schedule.
Yeah, completely.
What's the process for selecting these films like? Like, did you just have a general idea you wanted to do a festival and then notice a thematic consistency in some of the films to choose from? Or did you go in and seek out films specifically?
You've absolutely hit the nail on the head. This is kind of a culmination of a lot of stuff that we were looking for, our month-to-month stuff. And I guess it's kind of our own interests and the interests of our friends and our community kind of overlapped in. We were like, oh, this is a really interesting unifying theme, and how would we program around the theme was also running through our heads. So in terms of Hyperlinks, we're only planning on doing this as a one-off, and then we're going to move on to the next topic.
That's a really cool concept.
Yeah, True False definitely pull off the one niche subject over and over again every year, but I think there's really...
But they have a broad kind of subject.
Totally. And I think there's going to be something really cool about being able to, I don't know, see what's happening in the ether of the world at any given time and kind of programming around that. So yeah, a lot of these, Lynch was something we were considering for one of our monthly screenings, Tourism and the Task as well, and Mating and LAT Time. Yeah, were all stuff that we'd considered for monthly screenings and then went, oh, you know, it would be great. We could put these on over a weekend and, you know, unify them with some other titles and shorts that sort of fit the concept.
Just vibrantly into it. So we'll be back in just a moment. We take a very short break. This is a clip from, audio clip from, we talked about it earlier, Lynch: A History.
Absolutely.
And it's pretty sick soundtrack. So we'll be back in a sec. Stay tuned. We're on Film Fight Club with Felix Hubble from Hyperlinks and Static Vision with Glenn Fowings and Chris Evans from Right Nehru. We'll be back in one moment. Film Fight Club with Felix Hummel from Static Vision and Hyperlinks and Glenn Fowings and Chris Evans and Virat Nehru. Now, Searching Eva.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
you mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, you talked about it earlier about commercializing the body and how that's a film which is a good pairing with Demon Lover.
Yeah.
And I think,
So, Adam, who is the subject of the film, has since transitioned, and a lot of their body of work is about personality and identity, and they had a quite prolific Instagram account, which is what this is sort of built around. So Searching Eva was a period in their life where they, as Eva, were doing a lot of sex work and creating this sort of image of the Berlin vagabond, pseudo-vagabond, sort of moving through life with a very sort of honest approach to their body, their drug use and everything else, and kind of cultivated quite a big online following within that sort of scene with that. And I think it's a really interesting project because it's directed by, I forgot the name of the director, last name, but Pia, and it's this collaborative project where they kind of craft a back-end persona for this online world, but Adam is very much directing the project as it goes along, and I think it speaks really well to sort of like the different faces that people wear online and the way that personality gets constructed in a really kind of like hyper accelerated vacuum.
Another thing that I noticed, which I really like, is, you know, a lot of the films in a thematic way also blur the distinction between fiction and what is real and what is not real.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so we're not going into thinking it's a movie kind of conventionally.
Totally. And I think that this is definitely one where you as a viewer question the narrator's construction of their own identity, but also the director is sort of questioning that construction itself. And there's like some quite critical stuff that comes out in the edit while someone else is sort of building their own personality.
Mating those out as well, but absolutely, you know, kind of realistic thing. Yeah.
I watched Tourism, and that in a subtle way is sort of about how we create conceptions of ourselves online.
Yeah, completely.
A lot of the films are touching on that.
Definitely. And I think Mating's a really interesting one as well, because you get two people who are kind of sort of dating, kind of sort of not, and they're sort of giving each other tips on how to make themselves more likable and more presentable to potential partners and stuff. Yeah, it's definitely something that flows through a lot of our films, even down to Leave the Bus Through a Broken Window, in which you're kind of seeing someone realize that they don't have a film or an identity within their own films apart from like a pathetic loser. And how do you construct a film and a narrative out of that when you're just in this place of heartbreak and despair, but also fully knowing that that is an unreasonable thing to present to people.
With the amazing Jonathan, to an extent, which screened at the Cinema Grand Film Festival, and this goes, I think, on a slightly more surreal tangent.
Yeah, completely. Amazing Jonathan.
You guys are super into movies taking place on screens, right? Like, I know you've programmed Profile, I think, and fans of Unfriended.
Well, Unfriended Dark Web was something we were looking to pair with Zeros and Ones.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah. Unfortunately, was not to be. But Zeros and Ones, actually, the visual effects supervisor or creator on that went on to do the visual effects for Unfriended.
Okay.
Cool. And this is kind of a prototypical desktop film. There's a lot of animation. It's like a dreamed MySpace reality about kind of like this slacker loser who loses his laptop,
right,
and then accuses all of his acquaintances who are at this party of stealing it, and kind of eliminates them one by one in this very like technologically oppressive world where there's constantly stuff popping up on screen and little messages and everything else. It's kind of really hard to describe. I'd say if you can go watch the trailer for it, you'll get a vibe for the edit. It's something they achieve with that is like on another level.
Something me and Glenn have discussed on the show before is how we kind of hate the way that a lot of films deal with text messaging or the use of technology and struggle to visualize that. So it's interesting to make a festival that's almost entirely about
ways in which you represent technology and our connection
that's
with
that
technology.
I think you do it well. Searching did it. The Spider-Man animation film that was very popular. The one scene in Endgame with Hawkeye.
Oh man, let's not talk about Endgame.
No, but the one scene that was good.
It's not
film.
Good, folks. Sorry.
But yeah, like films always seem to be set 20 years in the past in terms of how they deal with technology, especially now.
Totally,
I think.
Totally.
So it's good to draw together all these movies that are trying to be honest about how digital a world it is, especially for the younger generations.
I'll tell you what, one that I can like fully hands down recommend, it's our first thing on Sunday, and there's not a phone in sight, is The Task, which is a film social experiment. It was this art project this guy was doing where he does a Tavistock experiment, which is basically a group of people in a room with circular hierarchies, sitting in circular hierarchies, and there's a number of exercises that are done, and throughout the day you can change seats, basing on that. He did the experiment 2 years ago, and after the proliferation of Trump and just the way that Twitter and Facebook comment sections have gone, it's just showing the complete and utter breakdown of what has been quite a well-regarded and well-respected psychological experiment over the last 40 years, how it just completely does not work in this particular paradigm. And I think that that film, in some ways, more than anything else, represents the way that technology has changed the world, despite not having any of the technology actually in the film and that not being a concern. So, yeah, I do think it's like a weird, interesting thematic thing that runs throughout everything. And like, yeah,
it's something that we're going to have to find ways like that to abstract it.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think the problem that I was talking about that me and Glenn find is often, I think depictions of technology are kind of thuddingly literal.
Yes.
Like they haven't found a way to seamlessly merge the aesthetics of digital technology with, film language.
Completely.
Except you do have one really low-tech film in a sense playing Sakawa, which is very relatable and has been a story that you can have seen take place any time of the past couple of decades, because you always wonder who is, what is real, what is fake, who is on the other side of the computer.
Yeah.
And this deals with the other side in its entirety.
Completely. And the way in which, you know, our consumption of technology, iPhones, whatever else, has just led to abject poverty over in other countries where we export all of our physical waste, our e-waste, our, like, you know, intellectual and policy waste and everything else. Overseas,
as long as they keep making stuff for us, it's fine.
That's it. That's it. So, yeah, Sakawa, it's in Ghana. It feels like a narrative film, but it's actually a really kind of profoundly shot documentary about the people who trawl e-waste to kind of harvest personal information to essentially catfish boomers, I guess is like one way of putting it. But it's not as, I guess, online and techie as that. It's really quite sad and moving in many ways.
Yeah. It's an incredible scene where they just pan out at all the people speaking on as if they were talking, but to persons who they were deeply affectionate for, but clearly they're putting this on. They're lying about everything. Everything is fake.
Yeah, completely. And you're watching them kind of extract, you know, $20, like a negligible amount out of them. And it's like, that's a month's pay at another job working, you know, sorting garbage that, you know, we've sent over to the country there. It's really quite, I don't know, confronting in many ways.
Finding the obscure, harmless stuff that you think is, I posted a picture of an iPhone. That's not going to come back to bite me. And it does. And
it completely
gives you... It gives you some scale and context as to the importance of what's out there.
Yeah. Everything is searchable. Nothing is deletable.
Absolutely.
Think on that, boomers.
One of the films that sounded really interesting to me was Idol.
Yeah, completely. So Idol's from Lawrence Leck, who made a pretty prolific video essay called Sinofuturism a number of years ago, and has been making a lot of films in, I think it's the Unreal 4 engine, so sort of machinima, which is animating.
Yeah.
You know, short films in video game engines. And this is a film about a idol, like a totally digital pop star, needing to write a song for the 2065 esports championship halftime show that will unite humanity and save the world. And it's a gallery work. We're really happy to have it screening in a cinema context because it's quite a interesting and unique work. And I guess is looking forward to a future in which where I guess, I don't know, to me, speaks a bit to, what's the word I'm looking for? Deep fake technology and like a future in which we're animating reality and how you deal with that.
In the event of Moon Disaster, speaking of deep fakes.
Yeah,
incredible.
Absolutely.
Probably my favorite short of the ones I've seen.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. That's a really interesting work.
It's fascinating, the idea that they create this video of Richard Nixon speaking in the event that Apollo 11 had crashed, and it looks very
real.
And they say at the beginning, this is a fake movie, and you're watching this address and think, wow, I could be drawn in by this if I were to see this.
The whole deep fake thing is just interesting to me, how everyone's like, oh, wow, this is really dangerous. Let's just keep pressing ahead anyway.
Yeah, completely. It's like we've lost the battle already.
Let's see what happens.
The whole festival is a cautionary warning about deepfakes.
Yeah, it's like, you know, oh, it's dangerous. But like, oh, well.
Yeah, no. Running Man really blew the whistle on this one.
I like that we're bringing in stuff, or you're bringing in, I'm not taking credit for your festival, okay?
No.
I like that you're bringing, there's stuff that could be considered cautionary tales in the program, but you're trying to give a broader survey of approaches to technology.
Yeah, completely.
That it's not just all like
doom and
internet's
gloom,
ruined everything.
Yeah.
Boomer vision.
No, it's just changed. Everything's changed. The goalposts have moved and
Yeah.
And that's also what we're trying to do with the festival. We're trying to kind of change a bit of the approach to, you know, curating a film and what is and isn't achievable on like a relatively small budget for a not limited, but, you know, niche audience and what we can do with that.
Now, the festival is happening this weekend, Friday through Sunday, at the Pink Flamingo in Marrickville. For those who have been listening, for those who want to go, for those who want to be a part of it, what do we do? How do we get there?
Okay, you can hit hyperlinks.sydney. That's our official Tumblr. That's got a bunch of information there. It's got the passes. It's got the films. There's three ways to do it. You can buy individual film tickets. They're $12 or less, depending on what it is. Then you've got 5 film passes. I forget the price. It's about $45. And you've got the full festival pass, which is, I think, $115. If you're a subscriber to our email, you get discounts as well. But yeah, you can get the tickets through there. You can get the tickets at the venues. Please come along. Come check it out. Come do a whole day. Give it a go.
Yeah, we're going to be there. I'm going to be there Friday, Saturday. Come say hi. Come check it out. It's going to be great. It's new. It's novel. It's different. And you're going to like it.
It'll bring the film community together, hopefully.
Yeah. Be weird.
And yeah, thanks so much for having me on the show. How much time?
We're going to have literally 15 seconds.
15,
so
15 seconds. How was Sonic?
Okay, Sonic.
Thank you, Felix Hubble.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, 10 seconds.
Gotta go fast.
Okay, Sonic the Hedgehog. Go fast. They shoot Jim Carrey wrong. No Dutch angles. Don't see it. It's passable, though. Thanks.
This has been Glenn Falcon. Bye, guys. Felix Hubble. Have a wonderful night. Enjoy movies. Good night.
Sweet. Yeah.
So we're actually back because we've decided that Felix is still here and we want to talk about our favorite movie of 2019.
Of all time.
And I've seen it the third time now.
Clearly it's your favorite.
Not even my favorite film I saw that day.
Was it Cats?
I actually quite liked Cats, but let's not talk about that.
Let's talk about Cats. It's too controversial. No, I saw it a third time. My friends, when I was a kid, wanted to see it. And
that'd be the real film fight, though.
And
I didn't see half the film, like, but right, from what I saw of the half,
I enjoyed Cats.
I rewatched Cats. I watched the new version. It's just as bad as the version they didn't change.
The thing about Cats is if you watch the whole thing, you'll like it less because I was really into it at first. Like, this is just so crazy, but then it kind of just gets boring.
Okay,
aren't that many tricks in the bag.
You know, here's my definitive hot take: I liked Cats more than I liked Rise of Skywalker.
You know what?
No, that's
I'm okay
so
with
wrong.
That, but we should say that Virat could barely stay awake through Rise of Skywalker.
And
he's asleep for like half
hence
the movie.
This hot take.
My defense of Cats, when have you heard a worse song? As the text comes on screen and it rises up and it's just like, this is like a bad like MIDI parody track from like a 2001.
But it's all about expectations.
No, the worst song
right.
is, what's the song about the two thieving cats? And dun,
dun, I've already forgotten the song because I needed to block it out of my memory.
The Jellicle Ball, actually, on rewatch, there is one good shot in the whole film, and it's during the Jellicle Ball. It's set back, it's about 20 seconds long, and it's just Francesca Hayward dancing.
No,
it's a clean shot.
The thing is, it's all about expectations. With Cats, I knew going in, I'm going in a terrible movie. With Rise of Skywalker, there was all this expectation of being wrapping it up and whatever, and being a mildly interesting movie.
Yeah, it gets even worse the third time.
Yeah, why is a saga? Why the hell do you call it a saga?
Time
starting a saga.
So introducing what we're doing. We're doing Rise of Star Wars.
Rise of merchandise.
So, what is the worst Star Wars film?
It's the one I told you it was going to be. It's Star Wars Episode 9: Rise of Skywalker. We did an episode I think the week before it came out, and I stand by exactly what I said on that day. It's the worst. The editing is bad. Everything I'd said sat unseen.
The editing is shocking. I love the way that it opens with like, whoa, which is like the. Does it open with the? You've seen it more
it's
recently.
The only
Glenn.
Film that starts with an actual. Okay, the first shot is the ships going onto the Mustafar and Kylo Ren in midst of battle. It's the first film,
and it's like, what's
the only
on?
One that opens in the middle of a battle, in the middle of actual things that we have to get started right away. There's no setting. There's no web going in on this. There's no contextualizing.
There's no setting the scene. This
is
not happening.
We don't know it's Mustafar unless even the hardcore fans will not recognize that from the graphic novel imagery, the cartoon series,
Rogue One.
You wouldn't know. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I still don't know what Mustafar is. So
it's the Darth Vader planet from Rogue One.
Right,
don't choke on your aspirations.
I thought that was a person, but there you go.
Immediately after we've got this, like, Palpatine's back for some reason scene, there's...
Wait, he's back?
The line is literally... Okay, Rose says, and I quote, "Do we actually believe this?" It's an unintentionally hilarious line.
But before that happens...
Dark magic, cloning, secrets only the Sith know.
Before that happens, we're not going to tell you guys. We have no reason for Palpatine to be back. Just go with it. But before that happens...
Still a better movie. Just go with
after
it.
After
I agree.
Yeah, after the most weird Darth Vader... Kylo Ren, I'm all the Sith thing. Then suddenly it's like Oscar Isaac's yelling a lot, and they're like hyper edited. No one knows what's happening.
Are you guys friends now?
He's having such a bad time in that movie,
dude.
Tell
me about it.
He does not want to be there.
There's
one of the better romance to occur, which Disney chickened out on.
I feel so bad for him because Oscar Isaac's a great actor, right? And I was thinking like no one is going to be more hurt by this film than Oscar Isaac in terms of their career prospects.
Yeah,
Daisy Ridley and John Boyega are two typecast. They're going nowhere.
Yeah.
Adam Driver is bulletproof at this point.
Oh God, John Boyega. All he got to do was Rey.
Well, he had like
Rey. Yeah, at one point, he actually got shot back by Rey.
Yeah.
Rey got something to tell you, Rey.
He had like multiple releases coming out after Star Wars that year.
Right.
So
exactly.
He's fine. Yeah,
and he was he's the best
Adam
thing about
Driver's still the best thing about this movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But Oscar Isaac gets saddled with all the crap dialogue.
Yep.
there's takes in this film where you can see that he doesn't believe in the dialogue he's saying.
Yeah.
But how rushed must this production have been that they used those takes?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You can see moments on screen where it's like he's not sure what he's meant to be believing. Like, when they get captured, he's kind of trying to do this, like, I'm, you know, like, he's the laid back guy. He's just shrugging, but also, like, I'm actually disappointed. And he just kind of looks like he doesn't know what to put in his face.
He doesn't
even care.
The same thing for Adam Driver. And he insists on wearing the helmet for the terrible lines. Right. Like, you're his granddaughter. Yeah.
But Adam Driver is still good.
We should have clarified we're spoiling it, but whatever.
Oh, yeah. People
we're
know
about it. We're spoiling. You've seen it.
I just say as well, like, the weird thing for me, like, I think the worst way to watch a movie is with a stopwatch timing the amount of screen time for people, but I am a Rose truther. Like, that is,
she was barely in the movie.
Messed up. Like, do not introduce a character, like,
and to back out of it
because a couple of people got angry online because they were like a pointless, extraneous character.
Do you want to actually give credence to those people? Like,
completely.
It's validating them, right?
Yeah, totally.
My other favorite Oscar Isaac bit is at the end when the villain's winning and he's like, oh no, I thought we could win. We can't.
I've got to go. You guys want to keep talking about Star Wars?
I mean, we could.
Yeah,
but it's okay. It's nice to wrap up.
We could wrap up, and I could just say review of Fantasy Island.
Tell us about Fantasy Island.
The first half hour is good, and then it's like 70 minutes too long. The Canary in the Coal Mine was Universal not releasing. It's Sony. They, of course, have the first look on Blumhouse. Somehow it still got to theaters.
Universal are releasing another Blumhouse movie we're not allowed to talk about, and it's actually good.
Yep.
Yeah,
but we're under embargo.
We're under embargo.
So
that's more for next week.
We discussed in a subsequent week.
Yes.
Yep. Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So we will stay invisible until then.
Absolutely.
We will be back in a subsequent week talking about
the
film,
Hunt. Yeah, talking about the Hunt.
Yep, that's the one we were talking about.
Yeah. Go to Static Vision. Go to Hyperlinks this weekend, Friday through Sunday. Pink Flamingo. It's gonna be rad.
Do it.
Because
unlike
Palpatine, you'll have friends. There'll be friends. I was
just waiting for him to say like zounds or something.
Unlimited power.
Okay, one last thing on this movie. Why are there no Palpatine memes all over the internet?
We're gonna make them.
It feels like it's such a goddamn funny thing.
Yeah.
That there
I was expecting
be
like it'd be replaced by
endless.
Like mini me.
Yeah. Speaking of mini me, I was watching Limp Bizkit's 1999 Woodstock set the other day, and during Faith, it just cuts to the stage, and there's Vern Troyer rocking out, and I was like, damn. I miss the guy. Rest in peace.
There was a time. Yeah. Rest in peace, Ventura. We'll be back next week. Felix, thanks so much for being on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So much nostalgia right there.
Bye.
Cool.
That was such